The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free Arfcom do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free Arfcom, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free Arfcom, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begin.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free Arfcom starts now.
That's right, Radio Free Arfcom starts right now, coming to you live from the Western Front Range of the Rocky Mountains here in Salt Lake City. Radio Free Arfcom is brought to you, as always, by the greatest website on the entire interweb, AR15.com, home of the Black Rifle. We have a jam-packed show for you today. We're going to have three live guests. We'll start off the show as usual with Joe DeBurgolis. After him, we're going to have author and columnist Robert Knight come on, talk about Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal and its impact it would have on the military if Don't Ask, Don't Tell does get repealed. Also talk about the book he helped to author, 10, let me look it up here so I don't say the wrong title. The name of the book is 10 Truths About Socialism. Should be a very interesting conversation with Robert Knight. After that, John Wayne Tucker, congressional candidate for the 3rd District in Missouri, will be on to talk about his campaign so far. He is, the only poll numbers that I have found, he is just destroying in his race, and he's done it on minimal amounts of money. He is going to have a drawing for an AR-15-style rifle, and we'll tell you how you can get tickets to the drawing. Also, after that, we'll have part two of our interview with the Noveski shooting team. They will be on live with us, finish up where we left off. There were a few questions that I wanted to get answered before we had them back in a couple months. So that's the show for today. Kick back, pour yourself a cold drink, log on to AR15.com, get your Radio Free ARFCOM going in the background, and enjoy the show. We'll start off, as always, ARFCOM superstar Joe DeBurgolis. How are you today, Joe?
Great, John. How you doing, my friend?
Doing fantastic today. We finally got out of this rain. We could get some nice sunny weather here in Salt Lake, so things are wonderful for me.
Good job.
Now,
good job, old. Yes, sir.
It's nice. And we do have Micah Clark of Camp Patriot in town. I haven't yet been able to hook up with him. I'm hoping after the show I can call him in and get those guys that did the Pony Express ride. I understand you actually got the NRA to donate a couple of things to go on the ride.
Well, most certainly. For those of you who don't know, and I think Micah pretty much encapsulated the entire journey and trek he's on last we spoke here on Radio Free ARFCOM. He is with two Special Forces members, top a couple of ponies right now, reenacting the Pony Express ride. And in the satchels, he's carrying a leather-bound embossed copy of the history of the NRA, and he is also carrying a replica model 1860 Colt Army. So he's got a firearm that's true to the what would have been carried by a Pony Express rider back in that time period. And he's carrying the history of the NRA, which most of us know was incorporated here in New York in 1871. A few years after the Pony Express, but nonetheless, he's carrying some very important paperwork with him.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's really nice of you to get that done for him. I know he's probably sitting on the back of a pony right now, his butt hurting, but I'm going to try to get hold of him this evening. At the very least, we'll just get him on again next week with the two guys that he rode with, get those guys on live to talk about the event.
That'd be great. And they're doing a great thing. Camp Patriot is a great organization. We do a lot of good things in the community with it. And it's all for the benefit of our wounded warriors and soldiers that have given of their time and sometimes of their limb in defense of our country. So it's an amazing organization, and Mike is a great steward of that charity.
Yeah, he is a great steward of that. He does more with less money, I think, than any other charity in the country, maybe. He gets a lot done for what he has to work with. Let's talk a little bit of gun law news, Joe. I understand that the NRA Executive Director Chris Cox sent a letter to members of Congress regarding the Disclose Act, and I'm not even sure I understand what the Disclose Act is trying to get done as far as the NRA is concerned.
Well, basically what this is an attempt to, well, in lack of a better term, overturn what the Supreme Court has stated regarding privacy and freedom of speech. This goes right to the core of campaign finance reform, which was a flawed piece of legislation when it was passed and signed. The Disclose Act is basically looking at organizations, not-for-profits, to disclose their top donors on political advertisements. Now, the NRA, obviously, is very intimately involved and interactive in the political process through a standalone ILAW organization. What they would want us to do is disclose their membership, their addresses, how much each of us gives, to what level, and identify them each time a political advertisement runs. Now, the NRA has never been a shrinking violet. We have always, at the end of any of our advertising, our ads, you'll see paid for or brought to you by the National Rifle Association or whatever the money was coming from, paid for by the Political Victory Fund or from the Institute for Legislative Action. What this Disclose Act is basically going to do is expose all the privacy of and cancel the freedom of speech that we all enjoy as a citizen of this country. So Chris came out, obviously against it. We're moving forward. We're contacting all our friends in Congress, and we're going to try to see exactly what can be done to ensure the privacy and the confidentiality is ensured of all our membership when we do our advocacy. So that's, in a nutshell, John, exactly what the Disclose Act is aiming to do and what the NRA is trying to prevent.
Sounds like just another Democratic political ploy to try to damage the NRA to me.
It certainly is. It certainly is. And, I mean, one good thing about Chris Cox and company and the great staff he has, they're constantly on the forefront in the protection of our freedoms. And we're definitely, Wayne LaPierre, who I saw over this weekend, is standing point as well on this very issue, because we have taken various steps. NRANews.com, that was our expression of freedom, take over the airwaves and what have you. The same thing can be said here, Radio Free ARFCOM. Are they going to come in and say, well, we can't speak about John Wayne Tucker or Chris Tyler, who we had on before, or any of the other elected officials or campaign candidates we bring forward? We would have to disclose if any of our people, as a result of that, give to those campaigns. And this runs contrary to the American spirit and what we do here in this country. So here again, we're trying to stand in the gap and hold back these torrential storms that are coming. And they're coming, folks. I'm just telling you. They're going to come after our guns again as soon as the 2010 midterm elections are over with. We need to register to vote. If you're not already, please do so. We need to take 5 minutes it takes to go cast a ballot and let your voice be heard.
Yeah, I'd like to echo those sentiments. Please register to vote if you're not already registered. It's really simple. It takes like 2 minutes to fill out the paper at the post office and mail it in. I think you can even register online in a lot of places. The other story that I saw, on NRAILA.org was from Fairfax, Virginia. Governor Joe Manchin signed an NRA-supported Senate bill into law. And it has something to do with preventing Bloomberg gun dealer entrapment schemes. And I'm not sure I even understand these Bloomberg gun dealer entrapment schemes.
Okay, what's transpiring? Mayor Bloomberg, under the guise of Mayors Against Illegal Guns, we spoke about that before.
Right.
That's the organization that is supplanting the Brady campaign. And what they have done is sent out private investigators. They're not law enforcement. They are hired by the campaign to go in and ostensibly commit a felony, by making a straw purchase. A straw purchase is going there and purporting to be somebody than they already are, that they're not prohibited to receive a firearm. They receive the firearm to get across state lines, or they receive the firearm in and of itself. So this is what Mayor Bloomberg has done. He's conducting these stings. I think some of our listeners will remember they went down south. They went to Virginia and Georgia and various places, and they preyed upon some mom-and-pop FFLs. The FFLs were in the right. They were not found complicit. But what happened was, is through the machinations of a legal system, they don't have the wherewithal to fight this continually in a legal suit. So what a lot of them did was, spared themselves the financial burden, they decided to just settle. And as a result of that settlement, there's a special master, as they call it, in the legal community, to look over their filings and who they're selling their firearms to and what have you. We fought that every step of the way. What Governor Manchin has done is take it one extra step. If that is discovered that these straw purchasers are coming into his state and, again, committing a felony, it's a federal offense already. It's against the law now in West Virginia, or will be so in a few days, that you can't do that. He's given Mayor Bloomberg notice not to come into his state. Don't try to do anything. He's been warned by the Justice Department not to do it. And this organization still sends out these people. And in and of itself, he has no legal right to do so. It's underhanded. To be kind, I'm searching for words here that could be expressed over the radio airwaves.
I'll say it. It's downright dastardly as far as I'm concerned. You've got the mayor of New York City having his people go out to different states and try to get other people to other law-abiding FFLs, gun owners, like you said, mom-and-pop stores, to somehow get entrapped into breaking the law because it's somebody from New York buying the firearm. Is that it in a nutshell?
Well, basically, that's what happens. It's a Trojan horse. They come in, and these people are good. They do the check. They do this. It's against the law. They're the alcohol, tobacco, firearms, and explosives has a program that they endorse through the National Shooting Foundation. It's don't lie for the other guy. No different if you go to a gun store and say, I'm buying this gun. We do the background on me. It's okay, but I give it to somebody else. That's a straw purchase. So you're purporting to be somebody that you are. You say, okay, but then I'm giving the gun to somebody else. That's what's against the law federally. That's what gets an FFL in trouble. And he's trying to connect the dots, saying that's how the majority of the crime in his city is being committed with these type of straw purchases. Now, other people out there coming across state lines with illegal guns? Yes, there are. Are there people out there who are applying their trade in a criminal nature in a manner that is used and injurious to all of us? Yes, there are. Are they law-abiding citizens? No, they're criminals. And if you can look at any state, you look at the amount of crime, it's minuscule, from somebody who has a law-abiding manner about them. Or if you need to have a permit like you do here in New York, you go through a vetting process, a background check conducted by a local police jurisdiction, and you're found out. When you sit there and you see all the millions of people across the country who have permits, those who use it in the furtherance commission of a felony is basically nil. So, they're just going to win those again, and it's led by the mayors against the illegal guns. If you do not know, you can go to the NRA or ILA.org website, and you can see if your mayor or your elected official is a part of this. If they are, I encourage you to politely contact them and basically ask your elected official as to why they're there. Because Mayor Bloomberg has sold these elected officials down the roads, basically saying that this is for illegal guns. And what they're looking for is to confiscate and eliminate our opportunity to get and purchase and possess and recreate with legal guns.
Yeah, Bloomberg really has gotten a little bit too big for his britches. You were talking about how low the percentages of people with firearms permits that actually are involved in crime. And I was listening to John Lott on the radio the other day. I can't remember what show he was on, the author of More Guns, Less Crime. And I think he said it was something like 0.2% 0.0002 or something like that of a percent of people that are that have legitimate permits to have firearms that have to go through the permit vetting process that are actually involved in crime. So it's it's just another.
It's not us who sit there and go and follow the laws and work hard and vote and do everything we do to be a good citizen. It's the ones that are up to no good. And, you know, by virtue of them even carrying a firearm through an illegal process is a felony. To make a decision to use that in the furtherance and commission of a crime is another felony. To make a conscious decision to raise that firearm and have the possibility of pulling the trigger and taking someone's life, another one. It goes on and on and on and on. It's not us who keep them for protection or to go to the range or a combination thereof. I mean, that's what it's all about. But they try to back and paint all of us with a broad stroke, and it's just wrong. And that's why we need people to join us, come in, whatever organization, second-rate organization that you believe is doing the carrying the water for you, get involved. And again, I will stress and stress until November, register to vote, get active with candidates that are pro-gun, have your opinion voiced and heard, and that's what this, you know, Tea Party is all about. This is what the Patriot Movement is all about. This is what, you know, we're mad as hell, we're not going to take it anymore. Well, okay, guys, we need you to mobilize and get out there peacefully and politely and get the message across.
Yeah, you can't just be mad as hell. You got to be mad as hell and actually be willing to go out and follow the due process and get things changed within the system.
Oh, certainly, and that's the way. That's the Democratic way. We can do it. But what gets me, John, is there's times when I sit there and I hear people complaining at gun clubs or at the range or wherever I may go, and with my duties as the NRA board director, and I ask them, are you registered? Well, no, I don't want to serve on a jury. Okay, but you just complained to me for a half hour. How are you going to change? Well, they'll put me on the mailing list, or I'll do this, I'll do that. Well, okay, then. You know, you got to get involved, guys. That's the battle cry here. Get involved. Sign on to the website at the NRA. You'll get everything for free if you'd like to learn what's going on in your area. Or go down and whatever political affiliation you are, call up that party office and volunteer your time if you can. The most important thing is getting out to the voting booths and let your voice be heard.
Absolutely. Get your butt in the booth this November. You talked about pro-Second Amendment candidates. We're going to have one of those guys on the show later today. You know him, John Wayne Tucker. I'm hoping with your help, Joe, we can have several more pro-Second Amendment candidates come on the show here between now and November. Let their voice be heard. Let ARFCOMers in those locations know who they are so that we know who to vote for.
Most certainly, John. And I'll bring them up as we can. There's quite a number out there. Already had a couple on. John Wayne Tucker, I believe, was the first one, and he's been hitting a home run ever since he showed up on our show. So I'm glad to see that he's coming back. Kudos to you for bringing these people forward, and I think we're actually going to make a difference come November.
I think we will. I really think we will. Thanks a lot for your time, Joe, as usual. Thanks for taking some time away from your family to come and be with us here on Radio Free ARFCOM.
Have a great show, John.
Thank you. That is Joe DeBurgolis, ARFCOM's own NRA board member, the first, as I like to say. I like to always remind people he's the very first AR15.com endorsed board member for the NRA. We always love to have Joe on. He brings a really good perspective. If you're interested in firearm news, you can always check out NRAILA.org. They have the most up-to-date news on all things involving the Second Amendment. Every day there are updated news stories. The most timely and important stories for the day. That's where we get most of the stuff we discuss with Joe is from NRAILA.org. Our next guest, I've been waiting to have him on now for a couple of months. His name is Robert Knight. He's a conservative columnist and an author. He writes for townhall.com, if any of you are familiar with it, a conservative website. They have a lot of good articles there for people who are interested in conservative politics and conservative issues. And he wrote an article back on May 28th called Conservative Media Fiddle While the Military Burns. And it brings up some very, very interesting points in regards to the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I think we know that we're headed down that road. As long as Obama's in charge, it's most likely that that's going to happen. I personally didn't think that the health care bill was going to pass, but it did pass. We had some really typical congressmen go ahead and get their inside deals and their own personal things worked out. We all know how it went. We were all outraged as it happened. But I think you're going to see the same type of thing come down the pipe here with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And I personally am worried about what kind of effect it will have on our military, both people that are already in the military, the effect it will have on them, and future recruits. I'm interested in what the effect will be with that. And we have him on now. His name is Robert Knight. Mr. Knight, thank you for being on the show with us today.
Hey, Mr. Gold, how are you?
Very good, very good. Thank you. I was just talking about your article, Conservative Media Fiddle While the Military Burns, and it really struck a nerve with me. I read through your article, and you brought up some points that I had never thought to think about. In your opinion, is it inevitable that Don't Ask, Don't Tell will be repealed?
No, not at all, because the people who stand the most to lose, the people in the military, haven't been heard from, and all the veterans and their families, they've been very quiet because, for one thing, I think they thought this could never happen, so why get all riled up about it? Number two, I think there's a process of education going on now that this is really about more than just pleasing a few people who want to go into the military and be openly gay. This could destroy the volunteer forces. It could bring us back to a draft, which could include our daughters next time around, because women are so close to combat that the combat exemption might be considered passé. That's the only thing keeping women out of the draft. It could be a way to overturn the Defense of Marriage Act, which defines marriage as the union of a man and a woman for all federal purposes. The fact that they've gotten this far this fast, I think, is because people have not dared tell the truth about it. It's a little like the Equal Rights Amendment before Phyllis Schlafly stood up and said, you know what this means? It means co-ed bathrooms. It means women in combat. It means an end to any protections in the law for women. And once America caught on to that, what looked inevitable was defeated. And I think that's going to happen here. But people need to get mobilized, and they need to call the Senate and let them know that they expect them to vote against this Defense Authorization Act if this is attached, this repeal of the law.
Now, I did read where the Army Chief of Staff, General George Casey, said that he did have serious concerns about it being overturned. Do you get the feeling that that is how most of the top brass feel?
Well, all four service chiefs testified that they said it would hurt the military and don't do it. And the Obama administration is trying to ram it through. You know, even Admiral Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who's a political appointee, and Defense Secretary Gates wrote a letter several weeks ago saying they strongly opposed any legislative action before a study is done on how this would affect the military that's due in December. And Congress said, well, tough, we don't care, we're going to ram it through. And they passed it in the House, and they passed it through the Senate Armed Services Committee. They passed it in the House over the objections of Ike Skelton, who's a conservative Democrat who heads the Armed Services Committee in the House. They did an end run around him and brought it to the floor. It wasn't an overwhelming majority either. So I think that, you know, Harry Reid has to get 60 votes because the Republicans say they will filibuster this. If this is in the Defense Authorization Bill, they're going to filibuster it. And I think they're going to stick to their guns on this. Too much is at stake to let the left use our military as a social experiment when we have a high security threat, we're in the middle of two wars. It's insanity on steroids.
It really is insanity. I don't understand. Like you said, we're in the middle of two wars with the possibility for a third breaking out in Korea at any moment with the type of rhetoric and stuff that's going on over there. I don't understand why now is the time to make these sweeping changes. It just really
doesn't
make
sense. Well, they
want
to do it before November. They know that there's going to be a sweeping change in November, so they're trying to ram through the entire socialist left-wing agenda through Congress as fast as they can. Hence and the way they do it is they declare a crisis, and they keep saying, oh, we have to solve this immediately, like the health care crisis. We weren't talking about any crisis until Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid wanted to saddle us with socialized medicine. Now we have, you know, they talked about an energy crisis, global warming. Now that's fallen apart. The data aren't there. We found out that they've been covering up data, throwing it out when it didn't fit the paradigm, smearing honest scientists who didn't go along with it. I mean, the whole thing's falling apart. But they're still pushing this cap and trade, and now they're using the oil spill in the Gulf as the crisis that they have to address. Obama just said yesterday again that we need cap and trade. We need to wean America off oil. Well, all the windmills in the world aren't going to power all our automobiles and trucks. I mean, he's kidding himself. But I don't think he really cares. I think this crew is so reckless that they really are driving our economy into the dirt. They're taking away our sovereignty. You know, where can you start? This is the most radical left-wing government America has ever had, and I'm not sure they share the same values that most Americans have. In fact, I'm pretty sure they don't.
No, without a doubt they don't. But, you know, like they say, in a democracy, a representative republic, you get the government you deserve, and it's really sad that this is the government we deserve for now. Hopefully, come November, we can deserve a different government. Now, before we talk
about... But we have to stop them in the meantime, and we can
do
this.
I agree. Before we talk, I did want to talk about the book and some of the things going on with this government. I would like to talk a little bit more about this Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the effect that it would have. Because some of the things you brought up in your article were things I hadn't thought about. And one was the effect on chaplains that are already in the military.
Oh, yeah. They'd be forced to resign. I attended a press conference at Family Research Council a couple weeks ago, and they had many chaplains representing chaplains' groups. And they said, look, if this goes through and we... you know, people come to us with questions about what God says about morality. We won't be able to answer them. And a lot of chaplains are going to say, well, I can't function under this, and they'll resign. And I think the left doesn't care a whit about that. In fact, they'd be happy if all the chaplains left. They'd be happy if all the Christians left the military. And I think that's part of the plan. You drive out Christians who uphold a certain set of values. You replace them with people that are more easily manipulated because they don't have that compass. They don't have that pointing north that they can rely on. In other words, the Bible. So they can be manipulated to any use the left wants to put them to. And think of the impact just on the average serviceman or woman. And we're talking about barracks and showers and intimate situations and submarines. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand this issue because they might have a homosexual coworker they know and like. Maybe they even go and have dinner at their house, and they think, well, you know, these people are great. And there are a lot of wonderful people who happen to be into that. But that isn't the same as the military, where you can't go home at night. You're there in very intimate situations all the time. And to introduce sexual tension into the barracks and the showers will not improve military readiness. That's the thing. They've made the case that this will actually improve the military. Nancy Pelosi has said, oh, yeah, this will help. Improve our military. No. The military has discouraged sodomy for generations precisely because it does hurt unit cohesion, morale, and readiness. And it's going to hurt recruitment. You know, a lot of the recruitment of the military does is in very traditionalist populations, especially in the South and Midwest, little country towns in New England. I've gotten three letters since I wrote that column you referenced from military families saying, you know what, we've been in the military for years. One of them is a Marine family. We're hoping our son would follow us into the Marines, but if they lift this, we're going to strongly urge him not to enlist. Now, multiply that all across America and figure out what we're going to get.
Without a doubt. That was actually going to be my next question. You know, we have such a large part of these recruits coming from the conservative Midwest, coming from Texas. Like you said, small-town America. That's where the majority of our military comes from. On a per capita basis, and I just can't understand what they're thinking. It's almost like they want there to be a draft. They want this. They want these rules, the combat exclusion for women. They want all this just to disappear, and it's very reckless. It seems.
Well, let me put it in perspective. David Horowitz, are you familiar with David? He's a former leftist. He edited Ramparts magazine, the Marxist
yes.
magazine, back in the '60s, and he became a conservative. And he's been outspoken about the left's plans for America. And a few years ago, he wrote that when he was conspiring with his leftist buddies, he said, well, you know, the American people aren't buying into our economic Marxism. But we can still take capitalism down. We have to capture the culture and destroy American values. And one huge thing is standing in our way, and that's the military. But there is a way to take down the military, and there are two ways to do it. And that, they are putting women into combat and homosexuals openly serving. That will destroy the military as we know it, and then we can move on and destroy the rest of the capitalist institutions. You know, people ought to take that to heart. There's something far darker at work here, and we're looking at an arrow aimed right at the heart of America. We're not looking at just a little more equality, a little more tolerance. We're looking at a very dangerous thing happening to our country, and people have to start, you know, people who don't call normally have to start calling the Senate and saying they expect them to do the right thing here.
Now, one of your colleagues, Ken Blackwell, wrote an article about Is America Forsaking Israel? It seems to me like this whole anti-Israel thing that's been going on during this administration is in the long run extremely damaging for us. They're our only strategic partner we have in the Middle East, and I think if we lose them as a strong ally or we shun them and push them to the side, the effects of that would just be very grave.
Oh, I agree completely, and the Obama administration has been sending very strong signals to Israel that we're no longer backing you. We'll do some lip service, but in many different ways they've been giving Israel the back of their hand, going along with the UN, not really opposing the UN, condemning Israel, treating Netanyahu like a third world dictator when he visited the White House. They didn't show him any of the proprieties of a head of state. They are saying many, taking the Muslim side often. You know, I think the last time I looked, Obama's approval rating in Israel was below 10%. They're on to him. They are frightened of this man because they're surrounded by enemies. They're surrounded by radical Muslims who want them dead, want to wipe them out. The only thing keeping them there alive, I think, is the grace of God plus U.S. military and economic power. And if we withdraw it, I think all hell will break loose.
Yeah, well, you can already see it happening. You can see they're starting to puff their chests and beat their chests, all the neighbors of Israel. They can tell there's weakness in the White House as far as Israel's concerned, and you can just see it. The example with Turkey the other day is one small example of it with the ship and the reaction to Israel's raid on the ship They're sensing the weakness. The Israel's foes sense the weakness, and I think if the week continues like this, before this administration is up, we could see some big problems in the Mideast.
Well, we could see an Israeli attack on the nuclear facilities in Iran because it looks like the U.S. isn't going to do anything to stop Iran from getting a nuke, and we can't have that. We know the world knows we can't have a nuclear-equipped Iran. It doesn't work the way it did with the Soviet Union, where the mutual assured destruction policy, or MAD, kept the two superpowers from taking the risk of launching a horrible nuclear war. But if you have a regime that's headed by a guy who thinks he's going to go to 72 virgins upon martyrdom and doesn't mind if his nation gets incinerated, they have a whole different mindset. And, you know, you really don't want nuclear weapons in the hands of folks like that. It's a suicide bomber country now. And now I'm sure a lot of Iranians would disagree, and they wouldn't like this outcome. But look at the leadership they've got. They are radical. They think they have to get rid of the great Satan, which is the United States, and then deal with the lesser Satan, or the little Satan, which is Israel.
Yeah, without a doubt, Iran is the biggest problem in the Middle East right now. I've seen intelligence reports indicating that is where Osama bin Laden is actually hiding, is in Iran, that they are offering him safe harbor for him and his family there. Without a doubt. And in my opinion,
but I wouldn't be surprised.
In my opinion, I believe Iran already has a nuclear weapon. I think they're just waiting for the right time to use it. They've had these centrifuges going for years. There's no question they have the nuclear material. There's no question they have the crude missile capability to deliver a nuclear weapon. I think they have it. I think they're just waiting for the right time, the right place, the right group of people to give it to make it do the absolute most damage it can do. It's very scary.
Yeah, if you were in Israel and you were watching the United States show so much weakness and indecision and even favoritism toward the radical Muslim states, wouldn't you think that, gee, you know, we're going to have to save ourselves. Never again. There will never be another Holocaust again. Not on our watch. We're going to have to do something about it. We're practically asking Israel to go ahead and launch strikes against Iran. And I wouldn't blame them if they did. I'm hoping it won't come to that. It would be great if we did something to short-circuit Iran's nuclear ambitions, but I don't see that happening. The UN sanctions the other day that we trumpeted as something great will do absolutely nothing. They're very mild. They're not going to affect their plans.
No. They've had those same sanctions in place for years over there now. They affect nobody but the poor people of Iran. It just makes them more poor. The ruling class over there, they're not affected by it at all.
No,
now,
I
your
don't
book,
think so.
But the book that you helped author?
To the military, people aren't even getting a debate about this because the media are so one-sided that they try to create an air of inevitability. And the left does that very strategically, and they've been doing it for years on a number of issues. And you just read the news columns, look at the broadcasts, and listen, and you will see that they are presupposing victory all the time in any of their pet causes. And this has people lowering their guard, thinking, well, gee, maybe it is inevitable, so I shouldn't do that much to oppose it. It's a very powerful psychological tool they use. And I've seen conservatives fall for it. Here's an example, like in the marriage debate. You'll see ostensibly conservative politicians saying, I'm just old-fashioned, I guess. I still think marriage is the union of a man and a woman. Now, when you use the word still, it implies that someday you may not think that anymore. You know, and you're mossback. You're just a dinosaur. And, you know, it's a surrender of sorts, surrendering a rock-bottom foundational principle in the face of sustained media liberal abuse. But we have to have leaders who stand up to this. That's why I like the Tea Parties. They're not taking any more from Washington. They're saying, you're going to picture us as crazy hayseeds and rubes and Nazis and Klansmen, and you're going to ridicule us. In fact, Chris Matthews is planning to ridicule the Tea Parties on Wednesday. The Rise of the New Right is a special on Hardball. And I saw the trailer for it. In fact, you can go to their site and see it. And they use the bracketing technique, which is where you show ordinary people, Tea Party people, and then you juxtapose them with militias and scenes of violence and that sort of thing. And the pictures of Obama as Adolf Hitler and as the Joker, which were made by the Lyndon LaRouche group, by the way. They aren't anything to do with the Tea Parties. This is the far-left Lyndon LaRouche people who came up with those posters. But Chris Matthews isn't going to tell you that. He's going to use it to smear the Tea Parties. So, no. You know, it's been the media are a major problem in this country. And I know coming out of a media background, I was an editor for the L.A. Times for 7 years, worked for the Miami Herald, Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel, Annapolis Evening Capital in Maryland, and I can tell you that the people in the newsrooms are so liberal they don't even know how liberal they are, because they don't allow any other views to interrupt their liberal reverie about how the world is. It's one of the most closed systems in our country.
I did not know you had that type of media background, working as an editor for the LA Times. Now, can you tell me, as a side question, as an editor for the LA Times, do you get directive from higher than you, from ownership, you know, this is going to be our editorial stance, we're going to be liberal, I don't want a lot of conservative stories coming out, that type of thing? Or is it just the culture among the reporters that keeps everything so liberal?
It's the culture. They hire and promote people that think exactly the way they do, and they weed out people who don't. Case in point, when I was at the LA Times, I was a news editor in the Orange County edition offices, and I wrote an article for National Review magazine about Rose Byrd, the Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court, who had voted to overturn 52 straight death penalty verdicts.
Wow.
And I said, well, the voters have had it. They're going to throw her out, and they're going to take two justices with her, which is exactly what happened. But when that article landed on my editor's desk, I had just been promoted to assistant city editor, and she called me in and dressed me down for 45 minutes and then busted me back to the news desk. And I said, well, wait a minute. You know, Times reporters, who are very visible, write for a variety of publications, like Mother Jones, the the socialist magazine. And she said, well, that's different. And I said, how is it different? She said, it just is. And so I appealed this to the higher management at the Times, and I got an email back from the deputy managing editor who, you'll love this, if you like irony. It said, well, look, Bob Knight can write for any publication on any topic he likes, as long as it's not a topic covered by the Los Angeles Times. Do you know how big the Times is? It's like a phone book, especially on Sundays.
They talk about everything.
This is their way of saying, we're for free speech, but we'll rig it so we'll silence them. So I ended up doing a gardening column for a while for them, just for the fun of it.
Then
I got a media fellowship at the Hoover Institution and broke out of the news business, and I've been at several think tanks ever since. But, you know, the mindset in the newsroom is liberal groupthink. It's really frightening how little they allow freedom of speech, freedom of thought.
Yeah, it shows, too, in what they publish. It really does. Now, I wanted to talk about the book, The Ten Truths About Socialism, that you helped author, correct?
Right. I wrote the first three chapters and the conclusion and edited the rest of it. So, yeah.
You had quite a significant impact
on
the book.
It's a primer on socialism, giving current examples, and takes you right through the beginnings of socialism from the French Revolution on and right up to the present day.
Now, I went to the website dangersofsocialism.com where you can read an excerpt from the book and you can see the documentary, Socialism, Clear and Present Danger. Now, I didn't get a chance to watch the documentary yet, but I did read the book excerpt, and it mirrored a lot of my thoughts. You know, we have more than 50% of our nation's economy under control of the government. The new health care bill increased it, and with the new EPA regulations on greenhouse gases, we're probably going to be up to 80 or 90% of the economy being under government control. It's just a steady march down a very, very tenuous path.
Yeah, I think so, and we give examples where we make the case that this never works. I mean, you look at Venezuela. They were a very big coffee exporter for years until Hugo Chavez had his government interfere in the coffee industry, because government knows best. Now they're a coffee importer. They can't produce enough even to have enough of their own people drinking it. Socialism ruins the economies wherever it occurs because it's based on a flawed principle of human nature. Socialists tend not to believe in God, so they don't think the Christian view of human nature is valid, which is that we're all flawed. We're all sinners. That's why we don't trust anybody or any group of men with too much power. That was the wisdom of America's founders. Socialists say nonsense. Men are basically good. You just have to construct the right system, and then we can work out all the flaws. But we need top-down management. We need a few smart people at the top to govern everything. Of course, that never works, because the genius of the free enterprise system is it accommodates millions of individual decisions by people about what they want to do with their real needs and how they want to spend their time and how they want to earn their money and spend it. I mean, freedom freedom leads to prosperity, and socialism leads to poverty. I think Winston Churchill said it best. He said that the inherent vice of capitalism is the uneven division of blessings, while the inherent virtue of socialism is the equal division of misery. Except the few people at the top aren't miserable.
Yeah, right, exactly. The people at the top of socialism always live really well, and I think that's where you get this ruling class of politicians that we have now. That just they're not against it because they know it's not going to affect them. It's not going to affect their families. Case in point, the health care bill, where even Senate staffers, not even elected senators, can opt out of the health. But your average citizen, you and I, we can't opt out.
But we can't. Yeah. Well, look at Al Gore. You know, he's for every left wing program that comes down the pike, and you know, it's made him very rich. He wants to impose cap and trade on our economy. While he is one of the biggest contributors to carbon emissions in the country with his massive house and private plane and so forth, it's always do as I say, not as I do with the liberals.
Yeah, it's crazy. It really is. Now, I was just reading some of the things about the documentary Socialism, Clear and Present Danger, and there are some very big names on that. I encourage everybody to go check it out at thedangersofsocialism.com. They've got Michelle Bachmann on there, Wendy Wright's on there. David Horowitz, who you mentioned, is on there. Marvin Alasky's on there. Steve Forbes, the chief executive officer of Forbes, is on there. Just some serious big-time names coming out against this steady march to socialism. And I don't want to sound as a defeatist, and we're very big on encouraging people to register to vote here on Radio Free ARFCOM. We're really hopeful about what's going to happen this November as far as a really hard move to conservative values in the Senate and the House. Hopefully we can even go so far as to take over one of the two houses, if not both, at least get rid of the bulletproof majorities that they've got. But without sounding like a defeatist, once that happens, what's to prevent the president just from continuing his agenda through government agency regulation, i.e. the EPA?
That's where Congress has the power of the purse, and that's where they can use it in the face of presidential vetoes and everything else. He can't force them to spend money. So they can clip the wings of out-of-control agencies like the EPA by denying them funding. And they're already gearing up to do just that. I mean, I've been in enough meetings in Washington that the talk is, well, look, it'd be nice if we could repeal a lot of this, especially Obamacare, and we need to repeal the whole thing, not just tinker with it. It's bad. It's got to be repealed. And what about Obama? Isn't he going to veto that? Well, yeah, but if you don't fund all the provisions of Obamacare, then it's going to go nowhere. So they have a lot of tools at their disposal to set things right. And I think the American people have to make it clear that it's not business as usual. We don't want the usual Republican response, which is, well, we'll just do less than the Democrats. We'll keep heading toward that socialist cliff, but we'll just do it in slower fashion, modifying a bit. We should demand rollback. It's time to roll back the power of the federal government. It's way out of control. It's exceeded its constitutional boundaries. We, the people, have to do it. And I think this is the moment when we can and must do it. And if we don't, that's when you can start to get dejected and despondent and think we're going inevitably downhill. But not until then. I think we have a major chance to turn things around in November. And in the meantime, people ought to be on the case of Congress so they don't do things like lift the military ban on homosexuality. By the way, that they're talking about repealing the law, not just the don't ask, don't tell policy, which is the watered-down version that Clinton brought in. The actual law passed by Congress in 93 with huge majorities bars anybody from military service with homosexual propensities, meaning it's not enough to have don't ask, don't tell. You really shouldn't be there. So if you complain, well, it's forcing me to lie. No, it's not. You know homosexuality is not allowed in the military. You shouldn't be there, okay? Don't complain. Not everybody has a right to serve. It's a privilege and a duty, but no one has a right to serve. The military has the right to make sure it has maximum military readiness, to give our soldiers the best chance to win and to come home alive. Anything that interferes with that is doing our servicemen and women a huge disservice.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, we're talking about socialism here, and, you know, after 150 years has failed everywhere it's been, it's done nothing but kill millions and millions and millions of people and put millions and millions and millions more under the thumb of oppressive governments, poverty, terrible economic situations, instability, war, violence, kids growing up without parents and growing up without being able to have any type of future. What makes people think that now all of a sudden we found the recipe to make it work? That's what I don't understand. Is it just some hubris and arrogance on their part, or is it misguided? Are they that stupid that they can't see that it doesn't work? I don't get it.
Well, I think there's a lot of hubris. I think they think that, you know, we can avoid the mistakes that others have made. But you have to understand, they don't want to just reform America. They want to transform it completely. They honestly hate America. And, you know, if you want to change something completely, it's not that you love it the way it is and just want to come around and improve it around the edges. These guys are really radical. This goes beyond the liberals of previous years. They fundamentally hate this country the way it is. They see it as the major problem in the world, and they want to reduce our military power. They want to reduce our influence in the world. And I believe they are trying to cripple us economically to cause the kind of crises that would prompt the American people to turn over ever more sovereignty over to the central government. I mean, you can't explain it any other way. You see that it hasn't worked. You see unemployment continuing to be high. And by the way, all the make-work programs in the world aren't going to help because private employers are scared to death of this guy. That's why they're not hiring. And I look at all the economic commentary on TV and in the papers, and I have to laugh because they go around the real issue, which is the lack of confidence in the average businessman that he's going to be treated fairly in the future and that employees he hires won't become liabilities under this socialist regime of ours. You know, they are scared. And that's why the unemployment won't budge around 10%. And the long-term unemployed is something like, or the underemployed is around 17%. It's far worse than the media are making it out to be.
Yeah, the media refuses to touch the real numbers, which, like you said, are closer to 17, maybe even 18% of unemployed, underemployed people that just have finally just given up on even looking for work who don't get counted in unemployment numbers. It's mind-boggling the way things have gone. But I, like you, I'm hopeful that we can really turn it around this November. I really am. Thanks a lot, Robert Knight. I appreciate being on the show. I'd like to have you get on in the future, especially as we get closer to November, to kind of talk about some of the possibilities we have as far as changing the direction our country's headed.
Well, great. I'd be honored, John. I really appreciate it. Please urge your listeners to go to our website, dangersofsocialism.com.
Absolutely.
And to call the Senate.
Call your senator.
Yeah.
Bust up
know.
That switchboard.
Early and often.
Yep. Crash that switchboard. His name is Robert Knight. He's a columnist and an author. The website is dangersofsocialism.com. Go check it out. They have a book, The Ten Truths About Socialism. They also have a documentary called Socialism, A Clear and Present Danger. Go check it out, dangersofsocialism.com. Our next guest is one of those people we're hoping that can change things from this march towards socialism, march towards Marxism. His name is John Wayne Tucker, and we've had him on before. He's a candidate in the 3rd Congressional District of Missouri, and he's very pro-gun. You all remember him for his commercial where he's holding his AR-15. He's got his sidearm on his side. He's very pro-black rifle, and he's got a drawing that they're going to hold to help if you would like to win an AR-15-style rifle. We're going to have him on very shortly. We're just getting him online now. Now, I had someone say, which polls is John Wayne Tucker leading it? The only poll that I have seen that has even covered the 3rd Congressional District in Missouri, the primary, was on MissouriSovereigntyProject.com, which is a conservative-themed website, states' right-type website. But as far as the Republican primary is concerned, you're dealing with conservatives pretty much only voting in this poll. The poll was taken down. It became polluted. I'm reading straight from their website now. With less than an hour on the morning of June 3rd, over 75 votes hit one candidate. Every single vote came from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Before the voting pollution began, John Wayne Tucker held almost 70% of the total of over 500 votes cast. By the way, the candidate receiving the polluted votes was not Mr. Tucker. So for those of you asking where's some polling information, there's some information right there coming from a conservative website. With conservatives voting in the primary, look like John Wayne Tucker has a significant lead, and he's doing it with not a lot of money. Mr. Tucker, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you, John?
Doing fantastic. It's wonderful to hear from you again and hear the strides that your campaign has been making. It sounds like you're really making some good progress.
We are making a lot of progress every day. It's we're really blossoming here. We're excited about it.
Now, I hear that actually the opponent you're running against is not even from Missouri, actually a New Jersey lawyer.
Yes, he's originally from New Jersey, a lawyer. A lot of his support has come from there. And, of course, he's been here in Missouri for a little while, long enough to be involved in some scandal with our governor and brought our governor down. So his record in Missouri is not the greatest either.
Now, let's talk a little bit about some of these issues. Unemployment right now is at catastrophic levels. With my previous guest, we were speaking about the unemployment numbers, 10% officially. Realistically, we're talking 16, 17%. What can we do to reverse this and get this economy back on track, because this government spending is just, it's out of control, and it's not, all these stimulus packages aren't doing anything for the unemployment.
Exactly, and of course this problem has been developing over a number of years, and I've been warning my students about it for a long time as I taught college American history. And the problem really relates to a whole bunch of policies that have been followed for a long, long time. We've allowed the industrial aspect of America to leave us and go to other countries, and this has had devastating impact on us at this point. We've had massive numbers of really good industrial jobs leave the St. Louis area in particular that I'm aware of, and all over the country I know it's a problem. We also have the problem of so many illegals coming in and taking jobs. And the administrations have said, well, these are jobs that Americans don't want. They caught them down in southern Missouri doing construction jobs. I think that's jobs that Americans want. And they were protesting in front of UPS, where they were working as UPS workers. I think that's jobs that Americans would like to have. So we really have a number of levels in which we need to correct this. We got to bring real jobs back to America. We need industrial jobs. And we also need to take care of this problem of illegals coming into the country and taking jobs. We just can't afford to have any of that happening.
Yeah, we can't. We've got to do something about the border. The violence down there is out of control. Our Border Patrol officers are being put in situations where their lives are on the line. We had the shooting the other day with the kid throwing rocks at a Border Patrol member. Just a very bad idea on his part to attack an armed man with a rock, but what honestly can be done? Securing the border is going to cost a significant amount of money. Is it something that we can do? Is it something that's fiscally possible?
We can't afford not to. The cost of illegals coming in here is at least $120,000 per illegal per year when you count the cost of education, teaching them bilingually, various other things that we do for them. The cost is just a lot more than people realize. It would be a lot easier and cheaper to close off that border in any way we can. If we have to pull up the tanks down there, I don't care. The border has to be closed, and they have to understand that we mean business. If we got to build a concrete wall all the way across the border, then so be it. Let's do it. And let's make it big enough that they can't get across, and let's put security there that's necessary.
Yeah, now Arizona was inundated with illegal aliens, and they finally decided to fight back, and the kickback against the illegal aliens has been massive in Arizona, as we all know, with the new immigration bill. They're also looking to pass a bill not allowing anchor babies to get birth certificates in Arizona, which is an incentive to keep illegal aliens in the country once they have babies here. Do you see this backlash and this move to this hard conservative values, is it going to spread to more states? Are we going to see more legislation like this pass through the states?
Oh, I'm certain that we will. In fact, Missouri passed legislation which makes English the official language of Missouri. So there's not going to be any more of this accommodating multiple languages here, which is very costly. So the states are going to take on the federal government is supposed to do. The federal government, that's one of the things that they're specifically supposed to do, and that's protect the borders. They're violating the law themselves. They made a law, and now they refuse to do anything about it. They refuse to enforce it. I wish they'd just go ahead and make a list of the laws it's okay to disobey. I can't understand such a concept.
Yeah, we have to make it a law to be here illegally. It's just it's just an oxymoron. It doesn't make any sense. My previous guest, Robert Knight, he's a conservative columnist and author, and we were talking about the march towards socialism here in the country. Now, as I understand it, you actually have a pretty good idea about socialism as your wife grew up in Soviet Russia.
Exactly, and so I hear all the time from her about the way things were there and the way they worked there, and she sees very clearly the socialist indicators. And of course as a college American history teacher, I can see very clearly the socialist indicators, And the country keeps moving more and more. The politicians are moving more and more towards, well, we'll get votes by offering to give something to the people. It's not constitutional. It's not what we are, and it's something that will bring us down. We can't, I mean, you can see this in any country that has adopted socialist platforms, that it has tremendous economic impact on the country, and there's a tremendous loss of incentive on the part of the people. So it's not good from a lot of standpoints. Not only does it cost you more, but when you take away the people's incentive to do something exceptional or something different or something good, then you lose all those great ideas that they might have and the things that might be the next great invention. It's bad all the way around.
Now, I understand that there's actually just a huge overwhelming overflow of grassroots support for your campaign, to the point where it's almost hard for you to keep up with your yard signs and your bumper stickers and getting your banners and all that type of thing.
Exactly. Money has always been our problem. We don't have a lot of monetary support, but we're getting a lot of people coming on board wanting to help out, but not necessarily capable of providing financial support. So we really need the financial support to be able to get the word out. That's the big thing. Not one dime is wasted in this campaign. We don't have an office. We have no paid staff. Every penny is spent on just getting out the word and doing what we have to do to make the campaign work.
Now, your primary is on August. Last time we had you on, we tried to do an ARFCOM money bomb. It didn't go over quite as well as we wanted. So we've actually changed things up this time. You guys have gone out to a local gun company, a gun shop called Sovereign Arms. They have donated an LWRC M6A1 gas piston rifle that you're going to be giving away, and people can get tickets by donating to the campaign. It's $10 for one ticket. $50 gets you 7 tickets into the drawing. $100 gets you 15 tickets into the drawing. $300 gets you 55 tickets into the drawing. And $500 gets you 110 tickets into the drawing. So all my listeners, all my ARFCOMers, the only place this is going to be advertised is here on Radio Free ARFCOM, and if we can get it approved through site staff and ownership, that we'll put a sticky up in GD. So this is a great opportunity for AR15.com members and visitors, ARFCOMers, to win a gas piston rifle and help out a very pro-Second Amendment candidate. Just go to Mr. Wayne's website, John Wayne Tucker. Let me make sure I have the correct URL. JohnWayneTucker.com. JohnWayneTucker.com. You can donate there. Fill out the contest follows all the rules for the Federal Election Commission, follows all the Missouri state laws as far as campaign fundraising is concerned. I wanted to make sure we got that out there. Go to JohnWayneTucker.com, go to the donate tab, click on donate, fill it out, and like I said, for the amount of money that you donate, depending on how much you donate, is how many tickets you will have in the drawing. One ticket is for a $10 donation, 50 tickets. Our $50 is for 7 tickets, $100 for 15 tickets, $300 for 55 tickets, and $500 for 110 tickets into the drawing. Originally, we were going to have the drawing end next Monday. I think we should let it go all the way through the 28th, Mr. Tucker. What do you think? Give people enough time to get a paycheck under their belt, get some finances in order if they wanted to donate some money to you.
Sounds great to me. Yeah, sounds great. Somebody's going to get a great little gun. I've held that gun, and it is it's sweet. It is very nice.
Yeah. I've seen the pictures of you holding it. It looks like it's got a collapsible stock, muzzle brake. It's pretty nice. Top rail, flat top rail, backup iron sights are already installed. It's a nice little rifle right there. So, ARFCOMers, here's your chance. JohnWayneTucker.com. Go to it. Donate some money. Your donation will automatically enter you into the contest. Let's go back and talk a little bit more about some of these issues. We have this huge oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. There's been a lot of debate about, Obama hasn't done enough, he hasn't done enough. And then also you hear some people saying, well, it's not the federal government's job to do anything. What should the federal government's role be in this whole thing?
Well, I think the federal government needs to be concerned about it, obviously, and hold the companies or the people accountable. But we need to find out first, of course, what really happened before you can hold anybody accountable. Who's responsible? Who did it? And then they should pay you the cost of cleaning that up. So the government's job there is simply oversight and enforcement.
And I agree with that. I don't think the government needs to be the ones actually doing the cleanup. I don't think the government is equipped to do the cleanup. Let BP do it. And I think the only sanctions and the only further restrictions and regulations should be that BP is going to have to pay the price. And if they go out of business, then that's the price they pay for not taking care of things the way they should have, not being as safe as they should have. I'm worried we're going to see massive restrictions and regulations on drilling for oil off the coast, and that's not something our country can afford right now.
Absolutely not. And that should not be the thing that comes out of this, or the concept or idea that comes out of this, because we don't know exactly what happened. So let's find out what happened. Let's find out who was really responsible. Whether it was BP or not is questionable. You know, we don't really know it's BP. A lot of people jumped on board. But let's find out who really is responsible, what caused it, and let's make sure it doesn't happen again.
We're on with John Wayne Tucker. He's a congressional candidate in the 3rd Congressional District of Missouri. We spoke just a moment ago about the beautiful rifle that they have. They're giving away as a contest, a drawing. To enter the drawing, just go and donate on his website. Once again, I'll go over what the prices are. $10 gets you one ticket. $50 gets you 7 tickets. $100 gets you 15 tickets. $300 gets you 55 tickets. And $500 gets you 110 tickets to win this beautiful rifle. And it is a really nice rifle. Hopefully we'll get some pictures posted up soon of you holding the rifle. I'm really impressed with how your campaign has gone virtually from something that you started basically on your own. Now we've even got fellow ARFCOM members involved in your campaign, and things seem to be going along at a nice clip. The only poll numbers I've seen, which I was speaking about before I introduced you, were you had 70% of the votes going into the primary. Is that a legitimate poll that came out, or is that just something that was kind of a sideshow poll, or are there any hard numbers?
Well, that was a legitimate poll, but it wasn't a scientific poll. And, of course, you have to understand that my opponent was putting out the same information to a lot more people than I was, asking for their help. So they didn't go and click on the button for him, and my supporters did. So the important thing to remember about that poll is that people were willing to actually go out and put their vote on the line there. So when it comes time for the actual election, we're expecting the same consequences and results. And no matter how much money a person has, it's still the number of votes that you get. And so this is not an election about money. It's an election about what do the people want.
Now, I understand that your opponent, I don't want to spend too much time talking about, but there was a firearms rights questionnaire that went out, and he has not even filled it out yet?
Correct, and he won't. He's not touching that, and of course mine is online. If you just type in, if you Google John Wayne Tucker gun rights, it'll be the first thing that comes up, and you can take a look at that. And you see that I haven't left myself any wiggle room. I'm 100% on board.
Without a doubt, I don't think there's any question about where you stand as far as our Second Amendment rights are concerned. That's why we love you so much here on AR15.com. Aside from the economy, what are some of the major issues that you see defining this campaign? We know the economy is number one. As far as you're concerned, and from your perspective as a candidate, what are the major issues that are going to decide this campaign?
Well, certainly the economy is just absolutely critical, and it's in a big mess. I think the illegal alien aspect is a very important issue. I think that life is an important issue, and I have a strong stand on that. I've got a strong stand on marriage values. One of the things that costs America a lot more money than they realize is the fact that a lot of the laws that we have today actually are opposed to marriage. They kind of take away the whole aspect of being able to have successful marriage by making it possible for people to go out and be on their own. Then the government provides them welfare support to be able to be on their own. And that is a figure that is hard to pin down right now because there have been no studies, but it is massive, massive amounts of money. So that's one of the ways that we can cut spending. I think that we've got to stop printing money. We just print money. We have nothing that backs it up, and we're printing trillions of dollars, and we can't afford to continue to do that. The value of the dollar is just going to continue to decline. Hyperinflation is going to take over, and the middle class is going to be destroyed. So we have to get that under control. We have to have a balanced budget, and we have to hold the government accountable to that, and we just have wasteful, wasteful spending. There are so many places where we could cut out the spending. The redundancy in government is tremendous. We're going to find that redundancy. We're going to get rid of it.
I love your stances, Mr. Tucker. I love where you stand. You're a true conservative, a kickback to the good old-fashioned conservatives, not the rhinos that we have today. Has anybody from the Tea Party discussed you? Do you get talked about at the local Tea Party events in Missouri?
Well, the problem is that, as you know, in some areas, the Tea Party's and the Republican Party have become synonymous, and that's the case here in St. Louis. And since my opponent is sponsored by the Republican Party, for some reason they feel like they need to bring people in from outside instead of taking homegrown people, then the Tea Party here in this particular area is on board with him. So that's unfortunate, but that's the circumstance that I'm dealing with.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. I don't like it when the GOP gets involved with the Tea Party, because the Tea Parties are not the GOP, and that needs to be made abundantly clear. The Tea Parties are something totally separate. The GOP is great when they do what they're supposed to, but when they start getting cozy with the left and compromising their values, that's what the Tea Party was made for, to step in to change the way those guys think. It just doesn't make sense. Once again, let's talk a little bit about this rifle. John Wayne Tucker is offering a rifle in a drawing for his campaign. The cost of the tickets are one ticket for $10, seven tickets for $50, 15 tickets for $100, 55 tickets for $300, and 110 tickets for $500. It's a very beautiful rifle. I'm going to try to get some pictures up here as soon as I can. Got a collapsible stock, muzzle brake, flat top rail, iron sights. It's just a really nice little rifle. And if you're an RFCOMer, then don't miss out on this. At least send in $10 and get your name in the pool. If you don't, any place this is getting advertised. This contest for this rifle, this drawing, is not being advertised anywhere else. It's not even being advertised on Mr. Tucker's website. He agreed to only do it here on Radio Free ARFCOM, and if site staff and the Avilas will agree, then we can get a thread tacked up with the pictures of the rifle and how you can enter it. But right now is your chance to get in. Get in where you fit in. This is a beautiful opportunity to win a beautiful rifle for somebody that doesn't have one or someone that just wants to add one to their collection. Mr. Tucker, before you go, is there anything you want to tell our audience, especially the people in your district?
I'm sorry, what was your question?
Before we let you go, is there anything you wanted to tell our audience, most especially the people there in the 3rd Congressional District?
Well, yes, I'm excited about the help that I've received from ARFCOM. You guys have been great. You've been my greatest supporters so far, and really appreciate that, and I hope somebody gets that rifle and really enjoys it. And I want to remind people that we need your vote on August the 3rd. That's the primary election. And the primary is set up so that the people get to decide instead of the good old boys at the party. So you've got to come out and let your voice be heard on August the 13th. If you don't select me, you get a lawyer from New Jersey. So we're hoping that you're going to pick a local homegrown boy.
Absolutely. John Wayne Tucker, thanks a lot for taking some time out. Hopefully we can get you on again here when we announce the winner of the drawing here in just a couple of weeks. At least get you on just for 10 minutes. I know you're really busy.
I'm never too busy for you guys. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. John Wayne Tucker, one of my personal favorite candidates, one of my top five definitely running in this campaign. He's very pro-Second Amendment, you guys. He loves AR-15.com. He loves the Black Rifle and what it stands for. Please, 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 by all means, if you have any relatives living in Missouri, or you live in Missouri in that 3rd Congressional District, get them to vote in this primary coming up in August, August the 3rd. Get him to vote for Mr. Tucker. We could get him on the ballot. I think we can see some big things come out of there out of St. Louis, which would just be amazing. Once again, if you donate to his campaign, you will be entered, a minimum donation of $10 for one ticket, 7 tickets for 50, 15 tickets for 100, 55 tickets for 300, and 110 tickets for $500 to win this beautiful rifle. And I will get at least a picture up of it tonight. Go to Radio Free ARFCOM forum in the discussion thread for the show, and I'll at least get that picture up for you. Now, our next guest, we're going to have the Noveski shooting team, Team Noveski, back on. I told him after I got off the show last night that I can't wait a couple months to get him back on. I had too many questions that I still wanted to ask them. So hopefully we'll get Jansen and Rob on here in just a couple of seconds. I wanted to go back to John Wayne Tucker. We don't see candidates, we see pro-gun candidates that want to run for Senate. We see pro-Second Amendment guys. We don't see a lot of guys that are pro-Black Rifle. They don't believe in the term assault rifle. They don't believe in restrictions, laws, to restrict our ownership of our favorite type of guns. We just don't see that, you guys. We don't see these type of guys come up. Oh, we see guys come up that are pro-Second Amendment, but it seems there's always a caveat. There's always an asterisk. Very rarely do you get guys that are 100% behind your personal right to keep and bear arms. And they understand what the Second Amendment was written for. They understand it has nothing to do with hunting. They understand it has nothing to do with personal defense. They understand it is the number one tool to prevent government tyranny. Guys like John Wayne Tucker don't come around a lot. We need to give them all the support we can. So I encourage everybody, please go to johnwaynetucker.com. Donate whatever you can to his campaign. He's really making some noise out there in Missouri. It would be fantastic if we could be an instrumental part in getting him elected to the United States Congress. Let's see. Looks like we had Jansen and Rob on, but we lost them. We'll get them right back here shortly. Please, if you have any questions regarding three-gun competition or shooting competition that you want to ask these guys, I think we still have a couple of those T-shirt and sticker packages to give out, so feel free to call up with any questions you might have for them. I'll get you the numbers here shortly that you can call. Any questions for Jansen and Rob on Team Noveski? The numbers to call are, pull it up right here. The numbers to call are 530-413-4511 and 530-413-4515. So call those numbers. Any questions you have for Jansen and Rob regarding shooting competitions, maybe some of the drills they do to practice, any questions you have for Team Noveski, get online now. Be first in line to get these last couple of packages of Noveski T-shirt and sticker packages that we have to give out. Seth, do we have them online yet?
You there?
Yeah. Are we there? Jansen, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. What's going on?
Rob, okay, good. It's good to have you guys on again. I appreciate you coming back on with us this week. We had a bunch more questions that I wanted to ask. We kind of got cut off. We ran out of time last week. We'll try to make sure we finish it all this week. Before we go any further, what's coming up in the short term for you guys, for Team Noveski? What's the next big competition on the horizon? Is it the Pan American Shotgun, or is there something before then?
Rob, you want to go ahead and take this?
There's a three-man tactical team, or a three-man, three-gun event up in Topton, VA. We're going to be hitting that this Sunday. And then, the Pan American's coming up. I mean, this last month in May was pretty hectic. We were out of state every weekend for the month. And then it kind of boils down to maybe about a match a month, for the rest of the year here on out. So it just gives us a little bit more time to prepare. But, it was a pretty hectic month. And we're just kind of being able to wind down a little bit, get some stuff taken care of that we weren't able to take care of last month. So the Pan American's coming up. And then I'm not sure the schedule. I'm not looking at it right after that. But they start to roll out in succession. We got a big match pretty much, like I said, once a month for the probably till December till Fort Benning three-gun challenge.
Yeah, no. I got the schedule here in front of me. It looks like we're going to be we're at the Topton, Pennsylvania, three-man three-gun event this weekend, and then DPMS, I'm sorry, the Pan American Shotgun Championship, which is at the end of July. There's the DPMS Trigun Challenge at the end of August. If we get in, we haven't heard if we're into that match yet.
Where is
in
that?
In September, there's Multigun Nationals out in Las Vegas, and the Adams Arms Ozark Three-Gun Championship out in Missouri. October, there's a match in Mississippi. It's a Mississippi Three-Gun. I forget exactly what the title is, but Sam Keen puts on that match. And then November is the Area 6 Multigun Championship, and December is Fort Benning Three-Gun Challenge. That's pretty much it for the rest of the year.
So you guys are in the Fort Benning event for sure, huh?
Yeah, we already sent off and got confirmation.
I heard that one fills up pretty quickly. Rob, quick question for you. Are you a member of AR15.com?
Yes.
What's your screen name there?
It's Mr. 50 Mag, MR50MAG. I'm usually
Mr.
50 kind
Mag.
Of a lurker. I don't really post a lot.
That's fine. And Jansen, your name is called. I just wanted to say that, so if it's okay with you guys, if people have questions, maybe on their own question, they don't want to call in with the question, they can just send you guys an IM, or maybe they want to get interested, maybe they're in your area and they want to shoot with you, they can go ahead and send you guys an IM.
Yeah, no doubt.
Absolutely.
Okay. Just wanted to get that out of the way. Now, you guys sound like young guys to me, maybe in your 20s. Am I correct with that?
I'm 32, and Jansen's, what, like... 28, 26.
I'll be 27 in August.
Okay, so you're not spring chickens. You've been around, but you're not old guys like me. Now, I hear you guys talking, and you guys are running through these events and running through these stages. Is this a young man's sport? Is three-gun a young man's sport, or is it something you can compete into your 40s and 50s?
By no means is it a young man's sport, because, you know, there's a few exceptions, but majority of the top three gunners in the country are over 40. I mean, it definitely is a sport that's forgiving as your eyesight wanes. You know, with other divisions, it's probably one of the only sports I can think of when, you know, the best shooters in the world are in their 50s. You know, there's not a lot of sports out there where you can compete at the top level when you're in that age group. So there's different divisions. You got full-on open division that aids in, you know, speed loading, red dot optics, and compensators, and you know, Jerry, and some of the other guys, some of the, you know, Rob Latham, even though he doesn't shoot three gun, but he's one of, you know, he's an older guy, and he's dominating, still dominating, and limited in single stack. So it's by no means, you know, a young guy's game. It's a weird dynamic. Usually you get guys or young, you know, kids who parents take them out, they learn how to shoot, they kind of support the sport for them, and then there's a transitional phase where they get out of school, they try to figure out what they're going to do, and they don't have a lot of discretionary income to spend, and then later in their late 20s, you know, when they got their life figured out and they're going to school or they got a job or they got disposable income, then you see them come back. So there's a spot in the middle, you know, where, you know, guys coming up, you know, got to figure out what they're going to do for the rest of their life before they start spending the money, because, you know, obviously it's not a cheap sport to get into. So, you know, usually they're young and then you don't see them for a while, or they're, you know, 25 and above. So, you know, it's pretty open and pretty well-rounded. And, you know, there's usually something for someone. You know, there's something out there. There's a division or a sport, you know, or a division or you know, different platforms or different options for older guys as well as younger guys. So,
now, just want to remind the listeners, Jansen, do we still have a couple of those T-shirt and sticker packages?
Yeah, we do. I actually dropped all the callers from last week, their packages in the mail today, so they should see those sometime towards the end of this week. And I've got
okay.
At least three more, so...
Okay, we've got at least three more, so be one of the first three callers to get in, 530-413-4511 and 530-413-4515. Just call in with a question for Jansen and Rob. Get yourself a free Noveski T-shirt and sticker package. Just a little thank you to the Noveski guys for offering that up to our listeners. Now, how often – I know you guys shoot quite a bit when you're not competing. You have to keep your skills sharp. Has the price of ammo affected how many rounds you shoot and the type of practices you do? Or do you have a structured practice? How has that affected it?
I'll let Jansen go ahead and go into this. I'm a little bit different. I've amassed a lot of components over the years. I started a little bit younger. I have a very forgiving wife, that lets me, pretty much do as I please, but he's on the other side of the spectrum. You know, he buys ammo and has to do it the hard way. So I'll let him go in on that.
Go ahead.
It's funny. Rob and I probably have diametrically opposed situations. I have the two Walmarts in the city I live in on speed dial, and every morning before I go into the gym or into school, I call up their sporting goods department. They know me on a first name basis. They know my voice, and I say, "Hey, you guys got any Federal 9mm in or any of the Federal Bulk Pack 223?" Because I am going through that much of it to the point where I really should have been reloading about 6 months ago, and just due to jobs and stuff, I might be moving. I'm not really comfortable with getting a setup and then having to take it all down and move it. But yeah, I've been buying whatever Walmart has as far as 9mm as cheap as possible for the last almost 12 months now. And then as far as 223 goes, yeah, it's made practicing with the 223 a little less than ideal. But the nice thing is all these 22 conversion kits that are out there, whether it's the CMMG kit, Spikes Tactical, Tactical Solutions. I know Nordic Components just released their new 22 AR upper. And so, you know, the nice thing is I can get some good practice in as far as positional work shooting a 22. So that's really taken a bite out of the ammo budget and made it better, a lot easier. And Rob, you know, he reloads, so he's got reduced costs right off the bat. But even then, you know, we're shooting every weekend. As far as pistol goes, a local pistol match in Georgia, you can go at least every Saturday or Sunday somewhere in Georgia and compete in a USPSA pistol match. And that's, you know, between 2 and 250 rounds a weekend right there.
When you guys practice, not when you go to a local event, but when you actually sit down and practice, how many rounds do you go through?
Go ahead.
I don't know, it's kind of weird because, you know, it never seems to be, well, with me personally, it was never the quantity, it was always the quality. And when I moved to Georgia, I didn't have a club. I didn't have anywhere I can go within a reasonable driving distance to go shoot ammo, you know, other than I'd hit the indoor range that was about half an hour, 45 minutes away just to check zeros, just to make sure I was on paper. But most of all my practice was done at matches, and I think it was a little, you know, I found out really quickly what was going to work and what wasn't going to work. I did a lot of dry fire. For 3 years while I lived in Georgia, I didn't have a club, so it was either matches or not or nothing. You know, I maybe can tag along with a buddy to go get my zeros for my rifle out to 300, 400, 500 yards, but other than that, it was strictly dry fire. Draws. Just transitional work, loading a shotgun with dummy rounds. I worked on all the fundamentals, and then, you know, now that I belong to a club that's right up the street from me, I really don't go out and just burn a lot of ammo because I shoot so many matches. You know, if my zeros, if I'm changing something, subtle changes is pretty much the time I'll go and double check stuff. But really, I shoot so many matches that it would just counterproductive to go out there and, you know, shoot 500 rounds in not the same stress-induced situations that I get from a match. So it's like I'm going out there to have fun. And you know, I might work on weak hand and strong hand and shooting groups and, you know, just double-checking certain things, making sure my slug and my buckshot and everything's where it's supposed to be. But other than that, I really don't go to the range other than to, you know, touch up some stuff, check some stuff, and just that last minute, I like to go before a big match, before we head out for a 12, 13-hour drive, I like to hit the range the day before, just so I know when I get to the match, everything's dialed in, I can confirm everything. And if I get out there and something isn't working, I know it's me and it's not the gun. You know, it's easier to shake it off. You know, I wasn't breathing right, or I got into a position hastily and I tried to shoot through it as opposed to fixing my position or getting a sturdier, you know, barricade. You know, I know it's me, it's not the gun. There's nothing worse than getting out there and just pressing shot after shot after shot, and you don't know, I'm doing everything right, but it's not doing what it's supposed to. Is it me, it's the gun, I don't know what it is. It kind of shakes your whole match up. So, I really don't go out and put a lot of rounds downrange, you know, other than in a match-type situation. So I don't know if I'm a little bit different than most people in that aspect. I just, you know, to me it seems like, you know, how much effort it takes to load all this ammo and get it prepped and all that work I do to go out and shoot it with nothing on the line, it's kind of a waste, in my opinion. Right. So, you know, I'm a little bit different than everybody else. But I think with the quality of your practice is worth more than how many rounds you put downrange.
Right, quality over quantity. We've got a couple callers online. Let's go ahead and get to them. Jeff from Arkansas on line B1. You're on with Jansen and Rob from Team Noveski.
Yeah, I was just wondering, I mean, did y'all start out to be team shooters, or is it something that just kind of happened, and if so, how?
Yeah, go ahead, you guys. I know you answered this last time, but we've got a bunch of listeners this week probably that weren't on last week, and tell people kind of how you got into it and how you got the team going and that type of thing.
Well, it was actually about this time last year. I talked to Rob and Todd, the other member on the team, on AR15.com, actually, through the Georgia Hometown Forum. We're all based out of the greater Atlanta area. And we started shooting pistol together, and, you know, they invited me to travel with them to the FN USA three-gun match back in 2009. And they're really good guys, and we all kind of got along and same sense of humor. And I had already had a prior very small business relationship going with John Noveski. He sponsors a website that I own kind of as a hobby, really. And, you know, I reached out to him and said, would you have any interest in maybe, you know, supporting us as a team, you know, maybe with a barrel or something like that? And, you know, it was a trial run. He said, sure, absolutely. And actually, we were already shooting Noveski barrels, so, you know, it wasn't like we had to do a whole lot different and change anything up. But anyway, long story short, last year we shot, you know, under the banner of Noveski, but we all had different commitments. And this year for 2010, you know, right after the SHOT Show, I got together with some other people that he'd done business with, like Troy Industries, Geisley Automatics, and said, well, you know, would you guys have any interest in supporting us along with Noveski? And they said, sure, absolutely. If John is willing to support you guys, we absolutely do too. And, you know, it really kind of blossomed into a three-man team. You know, I don't think either Rob or I, or Todd for that matter, expected, you know, this to happen so fast over the course of a year. And, you know, it's nice because it helps to have somebody supporting you as far as, you know, if your equipment goes down or if we have a problem. We haven't had any problem with our rifle, but if we did, you know, he's there to support it. But, you know, if we didn't have any of these sponsors, would we still be shooting and competing? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's our love and our hobby. You know, we were talking about it, but in May, we were gone every weekend. And, you know, the hours on the road get kind of long, but it's really like a vacation to us. And so whether we had, you know, any support or not, we'd still be doing this.
Jeff, do you have any more questions for Robin Jansen?
Did I cover it?
No, that covered it. I appreciate it.
Okay, Jeff, go ahead and IM me, radio_free_ARFCOM. IM me your address, your shipping info, and I'll get it out to Jansen. He'll get you a T-shirt and sticker package.
All right, man.
Thank you. We also have Wade in New York, line B2. Wade, go ahead. Wade, are you there? Oh, we lost Wade. Wade will call back, I'm pretty sure. You guys spoke about being on the road a lot, especially in May. Who does the driving?
Well, not me, no. It's usually split up. We have a couple of guys that we travel with. A couple of guys have, one of the guys, Chris Patty from CPWSA, was one of the guys we had traveled with in the beginning, and another one of our buddies, Joe. You know, we three already had a group of guys that we used to travel with, so we tend to trade off. You know, it's either one person drives this time, another person drives another time. We all split the gas and the rooms. I mean, we pile in. You know, I bring an air mattress and a sleeping bag. I slept on the floor for the last 2 years. I mean, I don't think I've ever slept in a bed in a hotel room that we've ever been at. So, you know, I'd prefer to, you know, we're splitting it three and four ways. It makes it so much easier. I mean, when you drive that far and you spend the whole weekend, you know, four nights in a hotel or three nights in a hotel, and the total cost of gas is like $75 or $80, and you know the hotel fee is $100 for 4 days. I mean, it really helps when you have a group of people you can travel with. So
shouldn't it be that whoever did the best at the last competition gets the bed?
No. I don't know. I'm kind of humble, so I like to sleep on the floor. I don't know. I've had some good runs in the last couple of months. I prefer sleeping on an air mattress. I'm sleeping in the same bed every week. You know, every month after month, I get the same sleep I'm accustomed to instead of, you know, some squishy bed or some rock hard bed or some. So I prefer the floor. And I'm usually the cheapest guy out there, so I'm trying to save a buck. So I'll let my buddies, you know, who tend to do most of the driving, I usually curl up in the back and fall asleep. And, you know, are we there yet? So, I definitely have the bed.
All right, I think we got Wade back from New York. Wade, are you there? Wade
from New
York. We're going
to call back a third time.
Hello?
Wade, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can hear you now. You're on with Rob and Jansen, Team Noveski.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. How are you?
Yeah. I remember Jansen when in his early days on ARVCOM when he lived here in New York. Occasionally we get to say hi to each other, and I was glad to catch you guys on tonight. I just was wondering, what's in the future for you guys? You guys gonna try to go to some of the bigger matches out west too, or are you going to just keep on and see what transpires here?
Well, wait,
go ahead. I know you guys said you're gonna go to the big Las Vegas event at the end of the year, right?
Yeah,
we're going to Las Vegas.
There's a couple big matches out west that we're going to try and make. And Wade, it's funny you called. I was talking to a couple of guys from New York the other day. Yeah, we're going to try and make the Multigun Nationals out in Las Vegas in September, and then hopefully for next year, for 2011, we're going to try and make Superstition Mystery Mountain out in Arizona and the Rocky Mountain 3-Gun out in New Mexico. But, you know, right now, one of the matches has already happened, and the Rocky Mountain match has been full for months. So, you know, with the popularity of 3-Gun, you know, exploding, really, and with the advent of this 3-Gun Nation television show, which is going to debut, I believe, in July on the Versus Network, you know, these matches are becoming increasingly more difficult to get into. And so I hope as a direct result of that, new matches start to pop up across the country to kind of help fill in the void. You know, when all these matches are filling up so quick and the wait list is 50 or 100 shooters deep.
Well, if you guys ever get up this way, let me know. Drop me a line. We definitely should get together.
Absolutely.
Wait, go ahead and send me an IM with your shipping info, and we'll get you one of those Noveski T-shirt and sticker packages, courtesy of Team Noveski, okay?
Great, thanks.
All right, we also have Vice from Indiana on B3. We'll take him now. I don't want him to leave him on hold any longer. Vice from Indiana, are you there?
Yeah, it's Vance.
Oh,
Vance,
sorry about that.
Yeah, not a problem. I was wondering how much money difference did it make to become sponsored, and how actually hard was it to talk these guys into sponsoring you guys so that it was less money out of your pockets?
On
all
you, buddy.
To go to these shoes.
Well, it's funny. I can't speak for you know, and there's varying levels of sponsorship. So, you know, this is just coming from my experience and Rob and Todd's experience collectively. But, you know, there's different levels of sponsorship. You know, our situation is probably a little unique because we're a three-man team. We don't shoot as a team at those matches. You know, we're a cohesive group of three. You know, DPMS, I think they have like six or eight people that shoot for them. And FN has, by my count, at least eight guys and girls shooting for them. You know, and it's just different situations. But as far as the cost, yeah, it helps. Like Rob and I, like we're talking about earlier, it helps defray, you know, a little bit of the travel costs when, for example, you get an entry fee covered for a match. But,
okay.
Now, like I said before, If none of this were the case, would we still be shooting all these matches? Absolutely. you know, we just got lucky. I really say that. You know, I thank Sean Noveski every time I talk to him or email him. And he's probably sick of me thanking him, actually. But, you know, he took a chance on us. He really did believe in us. And the same goes for all our other sponsors. You know, Troy, Schmidt and Bender, Audi Gear, EM Gear, Geisley Automatics, you know, they, and Nordic Components, you know, they didn't know really any of us from a hole in the wall. And, you know, John taking a chance on us and saying, you know, this sounds like something I'd like to get into, you know, I'll let you guys kind of have a crack at it.
So they not only sponsor you with gear, but they also kick in some cash too for expenses and things.
Well, yeah, and it's just sort of come about recently that, you know, if we're going to these matches, you know, our sponsors are willing to help cover some of the entry fee costs. But, you know, it's a case-by-case basis. You know, not every – I can't say that every sponsored shooter gets that. I'm not even sure, you know, what DPMS does or FN does. I have a good idea, but, you know, I just am not 100% sure. And then on the pistol side, you know, if you look at all the guys that shoot USPSA, you know, for different organizations like Smith & Wesson or, you know, Glock, for example, they're going to have a different – outfit and package than what we have in three gun. So,
mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. I'm glad to hear that you guys get a little financial help as well as the equipment with that, because I imagine it can be pretty expensive.
Oh yeah, definitely can be pretty expensive.
Yeah, when you travel like these guys do, I bet it does add up. But if you're starting out, you can still do local events, I know there are quite a few local events and even events within a couple hundred miles where you wouldn't have to stay in a hotel, and you could still get into it even on a limited budget.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering. You know, just like the startup costs and things. I think you covered that last week, though.
Well,
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you said you're out of Indiana, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Rob and I both shoot with a couple of guys that shoot a lot of three-gun out of Indiana. And I believe there's an Indiana gun owners website or something like that where they post these local announcements. One of our friends, Ryan Zamberlin, hosts at the Atlanta Conservation Club in Atlanta, Indiana. They have a quarterly multi-gun or a quarterly shotgun match. I think they're changing it up this year, but they hold a quarterly event of some sort that's either multi-gun or shotgun, and I would definitely suggest you search that out and go attend that match. You know, we know Ryan really well, and he's a great competitor, and he puts on a heck of a match there at the Atlanta Conservation Club in Indiana. So if you have any interest in just taking a peek, trying three guns, seeing what you think of it, that would be a great place to start. I think he has four or five stages. You know, it starts at around 9, and they're done at 3 or 4 in the afternoon. It's a great match.
Sounds like a pretty good day of it then.
Yeah, it's a good day, and everybody there, you know, like we were saying last week, if you show up with equipment and you're not sure if it's going to work, if you do have a problem, somebody will be willing to loan you a firearm or will have the equipment to help you get through the match. So just like I was saying last week, if all you've got is a Glock 19, a Ruger Mini 14, and an 870, take it and go compete, and you'll be glad you did.
All righty. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Vince, go ahead and IM me your shipping information. We'll get you that last T-shirt and sticker package, okay?
All righty. That's cool. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you for calling, Vince from Indiana. You guys spoke about just shoot what you're brung, and shoot what you got. You know, Three Gun, like you said, is exploding. With Three Gun Nation, this TV show, I think, is going to do nothing but help it out. And now is the time. If you want to get into it, get in now. It's still in this ground level. It's about to explode and become something very, very big, I think. It's just taking the shooting world by storm. So now's the time for people to get involved. This is the year. Spend this year to cut your teeth, get your equipment together, get your skills down, and get your fundamentals down so that by next year when things really explode, you're already in it, you're already competing, and you're ready to go.
Yeah, you know, it's funny.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, a lot of people sit on the fence and, you know, and I don't know if I have the right this or I don't know if I have the right that. And, you know, when I first started shooting, it took me, you know, a year and a half just to figure out my holster, my mag pouch, and my belt combination just for pistol. And it's an ever evolving struggle to figure out what works. And, you know, I thought I pretty much had a setup that I was going to stay with, indefinitely. You know, then last week I saw someone's safari belt where they had these quick attach mounting for, you know, basically all the same gear I already had that I had to slide through my CR speed belt, but theirs were all clipped on. So there's stages when I want to take my, you know, my, if I'm not going to be shooting shotgun, I'd like to take my shotgun, you know, my strippers or my loaders off the front of my belt. So if I'm going prone, I'm not, you know, laying on chunks of aluminum. And so, I mean, it's an ever evolving problem. You're always trying to figure out, streamline your equipment, find out what works a little bit better. You're always tweaking little things and little, you know, so if you're constantly waiting or if you're waiting for that perfect setup, I mean, that, you know, that's why I was saying, just get out and do it, because you just never know what's going to fit you. You don't, you know, you'll see everything available when you go to these matches. You'll see shoulder rigs, you know, belt, war belts and regular, you know, IPSC style belts and, you know, bandoliers and all. You'll just see from one side of the spectrum to the other. So you'll get a first-hand idea, you know, by watching competitors and seeing how they load. You know, they load strong hand with their shotgun, or they load weak hand, or they roll the gun over and they still load weak hand. So there's just so many different ways. Everybody's like, if you see a rack of ARs, you know, before a mat, before a stage, they all look similar, but every single one is unique and individual. And, you know, a lot of them are willing to share why they use, you know, that break, or why they use that scope, or why they use, you know, that stock or that handguard. So it's just basically get out there and do it, because that's the only way to do it. I mean, you can ask questions. I always see these, you know, I always laugh or when I see them on AR-15, what's the best? You know, what's the best? What, you know, of these three, which one would you want? It's like, well, you're asking a complete stranger, in most cases, what they prefer. And, you know, that has really no bearing on what you prefer, your body size, your arm length, you know, your stature in general, how you shoot, you know. So I just always tell people, just get out there and do it. It's going to be a constant evolution of what works and what doesn't. So, I mean, the sooner you start doing it, the sooner you're going to figure out what works. And you'll be able to go from there and have a base point to start accumulating, experience and new ideas, and be able to put them in play and see what you can adapt to your style of shooting. So, I mean, that was basically on the other end of his question. But, you know, that's one of the problems I see with a lot of shooters, new shooters who are kind of on the fence about getting into it, is just they're waiting for that perfect setup, and it's not going to happen. So.
Now, while we're talking about equipment, I had Chris from Three Gun Stuff. I don't know if you guys know him. He was on the show earlier this year. And he spoke about it. Three Gun is where equipment gets tested and the new stuff comes out. And you see,
you see
if accessories and equipment come out maybe even years before it comes out to everybody else at Three Gun events.
Oh, yeah. You see a lot of that. You see a lot of stuff being tested, new ideas, prototypes, one-offs, just theories, you know, like you heard, you know, like that Magpul angled foregrip, just different, you know. And it was funny because that thing is I had been shooting a rifle that way since the beginning, you know, so that I had always had my thumbs forward as the same way I shoot a pistol, same way I shoot a shotgun. My support hand on the forearm would always be thumbs forward, and it'd be torqued up, because that's a straight line stock. Well, having that angled foregrip kind of gets a more comfortable thumbs forward position. So stuff like that, you see that what was basic, you know, basically just theory of how to shoot a different shooting style is turned into an industry or a niche market for items that people can either adapt to their shooting or basically put them on their guns and go out and compete. And it's just an easier transition for shooting. I adapted real well to that foregrip. You know, some people who are the standard, you know, straight up and down foregrip have a hard time transitioning over to that. But, you know, it's just, you're always trying something new. You're always, and it's a freestyle sport, so you're always looking for the edge. You know, as long as you're not doing anything that's not, encompassing in the rules or outside the rules, you know, it's basically freestyle. And you're out there competing not only against your friends, but you're out there competing against the best shooters in the world, you know, or in the country, for who's got the, you know, who can go out there and come up with a good stage breakdown and strategy, but actually execute it on the clock with people watching and camera crews behind you. So, you know, to add to the already stressful situation, you're really out there testing yourself, and you're putting these, you know, we're not slow firing these guns, we're ripping them. You're shooting 40, 50 rounds in 12, 13, 14 seconds, throwing your gun in a barrel grabbing your shotgun, shooting 20 rounds, 20, 30 rounds of your shotgun, and then basically wearing your pistol out for another 30 or 40 rounds in a stage that might only last 60 seconds or less. So you're really high, you know, you're really putting a lot, a high round count in a short period of time. You know, I don't beat up my guns. I take care of them, but I definitely, you know, shoot them as fast as I'm capable. So
I'm looking at your pictures from Steel City 2010 Championship, looking at the picture of you guys and your guns. You definitely don't beat your guns up. Those are some beautiful, beautiful rifles. One thing I noticed was I only see one guy using PMAG there. You guys don't like PMAGs?
Well, no, the rifle, two of those rifles in that photo are Noveski N6, you know, 308 rifles.
So we're
using Armalite or mags, but yeah, we use PMAGs. Lancer mags and even good old USGI mags.
Okay, I got a question just IM'd to me from one of our loyal listeners, PJ Hogg. He listens every week. Thanks a lot, Peter. He said, what drills did you do when you were first starting out to build up your accuracy, and when did you introduce the speed factor? And also, is there any money in this sport, i.e., do you have regular day jobs?
Rob, why don't you take
Sorry, so what was the first part of that question?
What drills did you do when you were first starting out to build up accuracy, and when did you introduce the speed factor?
Well, you know, rifle, a lot of the drills I did with pistol and shotgun could be doing, you know, people laugh. You know, my buddy Todd would come to the basement and laugh because it was set up like a stage. I have a 2,000-square-foot basement,
uh-oh,
and there's targets all over the place.
Did
and
we lose him?
I would run from spot to spot. You know,
did
just
both
being
of
accustomed to move fast with a gun, not breaking the 180, and not breaking that plane, and everything's got to be 180 degrees forward so you're not breaking the plane on your left or your right side, muzzle sweeping people behind you. So I get comfortable with transitioning from, you know, I'd have port set up, and I'd stand back, you know, where my muzzle is maybe 3 inches back from the port. So instead of dismounting the gun and bringing it to the next port, I can just swing the gun over. And that's kind of one of the reasons I like using a 16-inch gun. Again, it's real, real friendly when you're moving and you know, in shoot houses and whatnot. Pistol, I would do a lot of draws, you know, on targets. I played with airsoft. I mean, it's hard, you know, they're behind the scenes, countless hours. You know, my days off of work, I'd be sitting in the basement. I'd go down the basement, load up ammo. I'd be talking on the phone, and I'd have the gun in my left hand. I shoot a Glock 34 and a Glock 34 for production, a Glock 35 for limited, for major, and I shoot a 35, 40 for most of the three gun. I just, even though some of these matches don't have power factor, I've shot limited this last year and the year before. So I'm just in tune with a 40 caliber major load. And, just getting accustomed to the gun. It's just an extension of your hand. So, you know, a lot of the work with quality dry fire, loading sessions, draw, turn and draw, and a lot of it transferred over from USPSA pistol to three gun. I mean, that seems to be the majority of the shooters, maybe I use that term loosely, but a lot of the shooters seem to come from where I shoot, start out in pistol, and then they kind of see the draw, like, hey, you know, I want to get out there and play. I have all these high-end shotguns, or I have a high-end rifle, and I want to get out there and play with it and see what I can do with it. You know, with rifle, it seems to be you got to get out and shoot it. You know, it depends on the match too. I mean, some of these matches are real accuracy based, so you can't just run through, you know, hammering targets. You got to really slow down because some of the shots outside of the A zone are, you know, they're the time wise with your penalty is just, you know, it's ridiculous. You're losing a half a second to a second and a half for making a shot outside of the A zone when you can make that shot in a quarter of a second or less, you know, to make it up. So you tend to slow down and get your points. You know, the money-wise, there actually is. And it's starting to, you know, I don't know if you've seen the video. I had won the FN Nation, the Three Gun Nation shoot-off. I won $5,000. I was second in that match, and I took a DPMS 308 rifle. So for that weekend, I was probably in the $6,500, you know, price range of coming home. And you know, that's one of the reasons, you know, some people say, you know, I shoot for fun, and, you know, we've had this argument with a lot of people, and we've talked back and forth, and we poured so much time and effort into the sport. You know, when I go out and I spend $500, $600, $700 to go to a match, you know, I kind of have to have an idea that if I shoot well and I do my part, there's going to be some type of reward. I mean, in the beginning, of course, you want to get out, you want to learn to become a better shooter. So, you know, you kind of deal with the cost associated with it. But some of these three-gun matches are, you know, $250 entry fee, 12, 13 hours on the road one way. You know, you're there for 3 or 4 days. So you go to these matches and, you know, like LaRue and Blue Ridge Mountain three-gun, Fort Benning, Rocky Mountain. Some of these matches have well in excess of $100,000, $120,000. I think some are even $150,000 prize table. You know, you can. There's really no other shooting sport that I've ever shot in where you can, you know, in pistol, you have to basically win your class. You know, you got Grandmaster, Master, A, B, C, D, unclassified. There might be 380 shooters, and you might have two or three guns on the table for 300 shooters. At LaRue, there was 220 shooters, and I think there was guns down to 35th place. I mean, it was it was ridiculous. I mean, the table of rifles was funny because one of the guys I shot with was 33rd at LaRue, and he got the exact same gun that I got for second place at FN. So some guns or some prize tables are just ridiculous. Some of them are it kind of all. You know, it just depends on how the prize table structure is set up. Most of them usually be a percentage of the shooters who are in that division. So if 80% of the shooters are in one division, which tends to be TAC Optics, the prize table split 80% for all the people in that, because you got 100, 140, 150 people in one division. So the prize table has got to go pretty long to accommodate everybody. And most of the time in three gun, the last place guy is walking away with a couple hundred dollars worth of stuff. I mean, you're getting your entry fee back. And I've shot pistol for 3 or 4 years, and sometimes, you know, it's a joke. You know, what am I going to get off the table? You know, shock, buffs, and rock. So, guns definitely gives back to the competitors, and you can pretty much go out there and shoot, you know, shoot well enough. And most of the time, you're going to leave with a gun or you know, a pistol or, you know, something where the monetary value can offset your expenditures and, you know, and your travel fees.
Sure.
So, and I have a day job. I work for myself. You know, Todd works, Jansen's in school and works. So, you know, it's tough to make time to go to these matches, but, you know, I mean, when you've invested so much into it, I mean, this is in lieu of going to school or in lieu of having another job, this has almost become a part-time job that I actually really enjoy doing. So, and it's starting to become lucrative, and we picked up sponsors, and, you know, hopefully we can just keep the train rolling throughout the year, you know, the next year and pick up more sponsors and go out there and get more, you know, coverage and bring a lot more people back to our sponsors and, you know, to show them that it was, you know, a good investment to jump on board with us.
Sure. Now, I think without a doubt with Three Gun Nation, they're going to see how successful that is on Versus. And I'm looking forward to the Noveski shooting team commercial once it gets shot, because I think it's inevitable.
Well, We hope Three Gun Nation really takes off. I mean, it's funny. I turned on ESPN on Sunday. ESPN2 had Versus Sports. I mean, this blew my mind. You know, here's a major network, major channel, and they're showing, you know, an event where guys are running across logs in the water. And I'm not taking anything away from them. You know, they were athletes. But I mean, if Timber Sports is on ESPN2, you know, people with chainsaws are just cutting up wood as fast as they can, and that's the event. I don't understand how Three Gun, you know, isn't just going to explode once this show hits the air, because, you know, if you watch our videos, it looks pretty exciting. I have no doubt that the Three Gun Nation producers and, you know, video editors are going to make it just a phenomenal episode, you know, week in and week out. So I really think, you know, John, you're right. Get in on it now, because, you know, after this TV show hits, I think these matches are going to become increasingly more difficult to get into just by the sheer number of people that want to become involved in Three Gun.
Yeah, it's going to explode. I guarantee that. Speaking of your videos, I was on YouTube looking at some of your videos. Anybody who has questions, you want to learn some tips from these guys, they have some awesome videos teaching you how to do things like weak hand shotgun reloading, just all kinds of things. Do a YouTube search for Noveski Shooting Team, all one word. And they've got 11 videos, I think, in their right now in their library. Go check them out. They just got some awesome stuff. Also, there's a video of Rob. Do a search for how to perform a one-handed load by Rob Romero. He teaches you how to do the ninja load. I love that, the ninja cock. It's just awesome. You do it with six different guns. It's really cool.
Yeah.
That thing's That thing spurred out of another YouTube video where there was a guy from the Philippines doing it, and it was kind of like, oh really, you know, I'm gonna do it in a state, you know, I'll do it in a match where it actually counts, you know. And so, you know, there was a stage design where it was an unloaded start, and you actually had to carry an ammo can full of ammo and shoot. You know, it was basically was forcing people to shoot one-handed. Most of the time, you know, in these freestyle matches, you can't dictate how people shoot it.
Right.
You tend to pose a problem in such a fashion that it would be conducive for you to shoot it a certain way. Now, I can't tell you to shoot it that way. I can't tell you to shoot it on the move, or I can't tell you that you have to shoot it one-handed. Now, you can stand at the table, load your gun, stand there, freestyle, two hands, and shoot everything, then grab the ammo can and run. But it was kind of like to show, you know, there's a lot of different ways to shoot it, and the way the stage, you know, it was one of those things. There's only been like a handful of stages where actually that would be helpful, but, you know, we kind of played with it, and there was a lot of feedback of people saying it was impossible and this and that, so we felt that,
hey, Rob,
you know,
I hate to interrupt you. I hate to interrupt you, Rob, but we're completely out of time. My producer keeps sending me messages. Wrap it up. So we've got to go. Rob and Jansen from the Nevesky shooting team. You guys, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. And please go check out that How to Perform a One-Handed Load on YouTube. Just do a search for How to Perform a One-Handed Load by Rob Romero. It's really cool watching him do it with six different guns. I want to thank the Nevesky shooting team for being on the show tonight. A couple of great guys. Name is Cole. Send him an IM. He'll answer any questions you have. Please get into three-gun. I want to thank John Wayne Tucker, third congressional district in Missouri, an outstanding Second Amendment candidate. Please donate to his campaign, and you can get entered to win that rifle. It's just a beautiful rifle. It is an LWRC M6A1 gas piston rifle, flat top, collapsible stock. It's beautiful. One ticket for $10, seven tickets for $50, and so on up the line. So just go donate johnwaynetucker.com. Also want to thank author Robert Knight for being on the show. Joe DeBurgolis, as always. I want to thank Merrill for keeping the links up to date in the discussion threads. Thank Seth, our super producer behind the scenes. Thank our listeners, and thank the ownership and site staff of AR15.com, the greatest website on the Internet. On the way out, I want to give my usual God bless the great Republic of the United States of America. See you next week.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.